tonight during our chanting service, we read the Song of Zazen, which is Master Hakuin's eloquent description of what we really are and what this practice of awakening is all about. And I just wanted to start by reminding you of a bit of that. He starts by saying, all beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from beings, no Buddha. How sad that people ignore the near and search for truth afar, like someone in the midst of water crying out in thirst, like a child of a wealthy home wandering among the poor. And then he ends, this very place is the lotus land, this very body, the Buddha. He's saying that we are already awakened, we are already Buddhas. And our practice helps us to realize our awakened nature. So, several of us have just come back from a 7-day sesshin, which, as you know, is a longer, intensive version of what we do right here. And we become intimately acquainted with sitting and walking and sleeping and eating. And as one of the speakers at the sesshin said, it's ironic that we have to go and do this practice in order to become acquainted with such simple things. But we really turn our attention in a most concentrated way to these simple acts of being a human being. And there were moments, listening to the birds at sunrise, tasting the coffee, where I really felt awake. I felt like a Buddha. And boy, there were other moments where I didn't feel like a Buddha at all. And what I found myself doing was telling my usual stories of what was wrong with me, of my various deficiencies. And I have my usual stories. Sometimes I call them my greatest hits. And I bet if we went around this room, you could all identify a couple of your greatest hits. Things that you tell yourself that you lack, or should have more of, or should have less of. But this time at sesshin, I saw things more clearly, I think, about my stories than I had ever seen them before. One morning, I was in the Kinhin line, walking right behind our smallest Sangha member. She was about 4'8". And I began to have this sense that I was looming over her, and that I was awkward and too tall and just not right in the presence of this petite being. And then that passed, and many other things happened, and then the next morning I was walking behind our tallest Sangha member, and I started to get into this whole story about how I was really kind of short. I mean, I'm average height, and I never usually think about my height, but I thought, you know, boy, I'm really kind of short, and actually people who are taller have a lot of advantages in the world, and what was my life like that I had gone through life being kind of short? And I went on, and then that passed too. And what I began to see was that I would notice the arising of a feeling of lacking, of being at, of wanting, of not being enough. And then my mind would find something to attach it to. It was really a feeling in search of a landing place. And I began to wonder how much of my experience, and perhaps many of our experiences, is this feeling of lacking, looking for a place to land. And we pick our usual favorites, but when we're in need, almost any port in a storm will do. And I speak about this somewhat facetiously, but it causes tremendous pain. It causes me tremendous pain, and I believe it causes many of us tremendous pain. This sense of I am not enough. And then I came home, and I was watching a tennis match on TV, and I began to watch the commercials from this perspective. And I used to think that advertising basically was involved in creating in us desire, which of course is one of the great poisons of Buddhism. But I began to look at how much advertising is so good at creating in us a sense of lack, of what we're missing. And if you just buy this thing that we're offering you, you'll be happy and smiling, and you'll have great relationships with your family, with your kids, and you'll feel confident. In 1 hour, watching this tennis match, there was a commercial for Rogaine to grow more hair for people who thought they didn't have enough. And then, a few minutes later, there was a commercial for something to remove hair for people who thought that they had too much. So why is this everywhere? What is this that bubbles up in me and causes so much pain and so much suffering? The Buddha taught about three different kinds of suffering. The first is the suffering that we're all familiar with. It's physical pain, it's anxiety, it's having too much of what we don't want, having not enough of what we do want, being with people we don't want to be with, not being with the people we want to be with. All those things we're familiar with. And the second source of suffering that he taught about was the fact of impermanence, that no matter what we do, everything that arises passes away. So all the things that we come to love, eventually we lose. As Dogen says, flowers fall even though we love them. But the third variety of suffering that the Buddha taught was the suffering that comes from the deluded belief of a fixed, independent self. That in fact, when we look, and if you ever do this in your meditation, you will see that when we look for who it is who's sitting here, who it is who's having this thought, this feeling, not to be found. No thing that I can call Bob that is separate from the world and abides. I'm more like a set of software programs, a set of habits, a set of causes and conditions that repeat, yes, but shift and change, and nothing to hold on to. The Buddha knew that deep down we all have an intuitive sense that there is no self, no substantive independent self, and that that sense of lack bubbles up into our lives and is a tremendous source of suffering. He saw emperors building empires that they were sure had to last, amassing wealth beyond anybody's wildest dreams, and certainly wealth beyond what anybody could use, one person could use. And he saw that all of this was a futile but desperate effort to shore up a sense of me as somebody who's here, who everybody needs to know about, and who will last through time. And of course, at the deepest level, we know that that can't happen. But the Buddha knew that that sense of lack bubbles up, and we find places to put it. We find objects to latch onto and say, if I only had that, if I were only more that way, if I were only less this way. So much suffering from that sense of self. And it has tremendous ramifications for not only our lives, but for our society. Think about people who eat up the earth's resources to amass wealth. Wealth that they really can't use as individuals, just for the sake of amassing wealth. The way that we try to see ourselves as separate, independent selves, separate from nature, and the result is using up the earth's resources, and perhaps using up the planet. David Loy is a Zen teacher and philosopher who writes very eloquently about this, about the social consequences of this delusion of a fixed, independent sense of self. So I highly recommend Googling him and seeing some of what he says about this. But in the meantime, where does that leave us? Well, the Buddha famously said, I teach suffering and I teach the end of suffering. And what did he mean by that? Well, the end of suffering comes as we begin to see through this idea of the fixed, independent self. So that what this practice is really about is awakening. Many of us come for other things. We come because we're hurting. We come because we're anxious. We come because we want to calm down, to relax. And all of that may or may not happen. But what this practice really sets us up to do is to wake up to that truth. As we sit here and we listen to the sound of the fan, we feel our heart beating, we feel the breath going in and out, the air on our skin. And sometimes, in moments, what happens to us is what Dogen describes as body and mind falling away. And I don't think he was talking about any mystical experience that only a few people have, but an experience that all of us have had. At some points in our lives, and perhaps at some points on the cushion. Often people describe having it when they're out in nature, and just the immediacy of everything that arises in the natural world comes forth, and the self is irrelevant, or looking up at the stars in a place where you can see lots of stars. Some athletes talk about it as flow. Artists, musicians, where you're just in it. You're just a part of life and not separate from it. And actually, it's one of the most gratifying experiences that people have, that we don't need this practice in order to have, but this practice sets us up to experience that. And with that, to know the truth of our awakening, which is completely a part of everything else. And so we come and we sit. And we don't make this awareness come. We can't make it come. But as James Ford is fond of saying, this practice helps us to be more prone to the accidents that are involved in these moments of awakening. And that is literally how Hakuin can say, this very place is the lotus land. And that's how the ancient teachers constantly said, right here, right now, available to us, every moment. It can sound like a pat saying, but it's not. They mean it quite literally. Nothing spooky, nothing supernatural. Just this, right here, when we allow ourselves to be open to it. How boundless and free is the sky of samadhi? How bright the full moon of wisdom? Truly, is anything missing now? Nirvana is right here before our eyes. This very place is the lotus land. This very body, the Buddha. So, dialogue, monologue, thoughts?
Thank you, Bob, for one thing, just bringing us back to the Song of Zazen, which we used to recite a lot more often, which I've always really, really enjoyed. What a nice way you opened it up for us. And one of the things that came up for me early in your talk is, you know, that first line, all beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. You know, so yeah, ice is just water, but it's water in an unusual state, you know, and we think that water ordinarily wants to flow, you know, and it will go with, you know, whatever contour it goes over. But ice gets all rigid, and it wants to stay in its form.
Yeah.
And you know,
yeah.
It doesn't. You know, it doesn't allow itself to express its nature. So it's by nature, it's water. And when you were talking about the way that you know we construct and constantly reconstruct and maintain this artificial self, through our feelings of lack and desire, and you know, it's like that. It's like that. I was thinking it's like the ice in the fridge, you know, just until we just lose our spontaneity and we lose our ability to flow. And, you know, and I was thinking too how all you really have to do with ice is you don't have to do anything special to get ice back in the water. You just take it out of the freezer and just set it anywhere and it will become water. So here we are.
Exactly. Could not have said it better.
I was also on the retreat last week, and one of the things that struck me was the fact that we read from the liturgy book during the sutra services every day, and so we read a variety of different readings, like this one. We read the Song of Zazen, as far as I remember, at least once. And at one point in the retreat, I thought, well, this is too much. Here we have another reading, which I have not heard before, and I can't make sense of it. I can't add them all together. And then I realized that's not the point. That's not why we read them. One of the things I really liked about your talk is that you read it and read some of those significant lines and allowed us to hear them and to hear their power. Because this is what I realized, that in a practice situation, these readings, which have been carefully chosen by our guiding teachers, really have power. And any one of these phrases can induce the sort of awakening that Bob is talking about. In fact, you know, by reading it, you gave us that opportunity. And so what? I mean, I was just struck also by the ice metaphor and also by the line that follows it, without beings, no Buddha, which really says something about us, without beings, no Buddha. And so thank you for just reading it over and giving us the opportunity to experience the truth of what you were saying.
You know, there's a saying about some of these teachings that sometimes they can be opaque to the mind but radiant to the heart. That sometimes we hear things and it's like, huh? But something happens, something quivers. And very often, some of you may find that you'll have read something 100 times, but then a phrase will jump out at you for all of a sudden. And I think that part of what we're trying to do is just give you more chances to have things pop. to give myself more chances to have things pop. So I read it for myself.
Yeah, I really was struck by that line too. Without us, that's it. And thought, wow, you know, all these religions, all this looking out for something that's right here, and how much suffering there is because we're looking out.
And seeing ourselves as separate from what's out there.
Singer, so that's my main road into
yeah.
it, and I just love singing more than anything, and I just resist practice so much.
Resist which kind of practice?
All of it.
Like practicing singing, practicing zazen, practicing anything.
Yeah.
And do you? You know, I wonder if there's something different that when you sing, you're just in it, as opposed to now I'm going to practice this.
Well, it's the step between deciding to go into it and being into it.
Yeah. You know, and I think what's important about that is that we can't. None of that, you can, I mean, I often sit down and say, okay, I'm just going to see through my deluded self, right? I'm just going to see beyond it. It just can't happen. It just doesn't happen. These experiences happen to us. And you know, so my hunch is that you, like so many artists, have these experiences when you're just in it, when you're just doing your art.
I was also at the retreat, and I was really struck this time by the sutras. I often get very frustrated by them, trying to figure out what they mean and finding that they're inconsistent from one writer to the next, they're inconsistent from one paragraph to the next. And it used to really bug me because I kind of couldn't get out of that part. And sometimes I would think, well, you shouldn't really read them until you've experienced the stuff because they only make sense after you've had the experiences. Sort of recognize them as they're being read. But I also had an experience, I guess similar to what Pierce was saying this time, where phrases just jumped out that had nothing to do with the overall flow of it. And I think that was, for me at least, was a very different way of experiencing. Something would like hit me like this, and I would say, I have no idea what that means. And something in me knew what it meant, even though it wasn't obviously my mind in that sense. And it was very interesting that things would just sort of catch me off guard. Mm-hmm. Being in a different state of mind, it would just, something would really hit me, and I wouldn't even then spend a lot of time trying to figure out what it was, because I often couldn't figure out what it was. So they felt different as I sort of approached the whole experience of it differently, and I could see them as sometimes it's like poems, you know, with just a beautiful image that stays with you, even if you feel like you don't get the poem.
Yeah.
And so I really also appreciate having it read out loud that way and being able to listen in a different way than I'm used to listening.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think what you're pointing to is something that I find so hard, which is that I'm so used to trying to figure things out, and so to let he said that, but then two paragraphs later he said that, when, you know, and then I realized that when I can let that go, which isn't all the time, sometimes then things happen. And sometimes, I don't know if other people have had this, but sometimes experiences in Zazen, I will have an experience, and it's tiny, nothing big, but then I'll go, oh, that's what that phrase meant in that sutra.